Alrighty, we'll get started. Give me a hand up if you can hear me. Well, alright, everybody sort of quickly put the headphones on. Today we're going to be talking about release management, so in the context of Visual Studio Release Manager. We're going to be talking about Azure, depending, you know, kind of where you're from or who kind of taught you. And we're going to be talking about desired state configuration in terms of PowerShell and DSC. If that's not the session you're after, then there's actually a configuration manager session next door, and that's kind of where all the IT admins have gone. And so they're like, oh, I wish we were over in this session because this is like the real way to do it. So, first of all, if you, just a quick show of hands, who was in my session yesterday on Azure websites? Okay, so it's about, you know, 75%. And who was in Adam and Adam's session just before lunch on Azure websites again? Okay, so in one of their slides, they kind of talked about, you know, stage one, which is just, you know, I just drag and drop files, you know, into my web server, and that's deployment. And stage two was, we've kind of automated a little bit, and we've actually got a, you know, an xcopy script or a PowerShell script that actually just, you know, copies the files, and, you know, that's our deployment script. That was kind of like stage two. Stage three is like, let's just take all that, you know, manual stuff out of it, and let's just do continuous deployment where I check something in and it just goes and deploys it. And they, you know, they included branches, which allows you to separate, you know, your sort of your test deployment and your production deployment. And that was kind of an extension of what I did yesterday. But what they kind of alluded to is this sort of stage four maturity. And this is where, you know, what one of the things that they were doing was they're actually taking the same code and they were recompiling it each time before they deployed it to each environment. And that's a little bit naughty because, you know, although you're taking the same code, you're actually compiling it, you know, on, you know, different at different times, and you're doing different builds. And so although the risk of it being, you know, actual a different deployment is, you know, sort of fairly small, it's actually a different package that you're deploying. And today what I'm going to talk about is how you do one build, you know, using your build server or, you know, whatever build server that is, and taking that single build package and deploying it and promoting it through your dev, test, you know, production environments using release management. So I don't need to go through this. My name's Grant Holiday. There's my blog. Got a book. If you haven't got it and you didn't buy it last night, now's the time to buy it. I'm a senior service engineer on the Visual Studio Online team. And so what that means is if there's a problem on Visual Studio Online in basically the Australia sort of daytime, I'm the first guy that gets the call, and I'll jump on there and go, yeah, this is a real issue, you know, and I'll start calling people up in the States to actually dive in and, you know, have a look at the issue and fix it. If it's not a real issue, then I'll sort of fix it myself, or, you know, I'll just sort of call off the alarm. So first thing we're talking about is release management. Then I'm going to show you what PowerShell desired state configuration is. And then we're going to talk about this new thing called Azure Resource Manager Tools. And it's kind of, you know, I'm not going to show how to kind of join the two together, but think about that as, you know, something that you could do today with a lot of hard work. But I imagine it's something that, you know, the Azure team and the Visual Studio team will sort of get together and make a lot better. But essentially, it's a way of doing Azure deployments as, you know, defining them in configuration and then just saying, hey, Azure, go build this. But we'll talk about that a bit more later on. So does this look like anybody's deployment script? Yeah, I see a few nods in the room. You know, it's an old school batch file with all these, you know, variable replacements, and, you know, check out that log file path. You know, that's just like, oh my God, you know, what are they doing with all those variables to sort of join them together? They're just trying to get, you know, the log file name to be, you know, year, month, day. And then, you know, if you kind of look through this, there's a whole bunch of processing and the for loops, you know, over a whole set of SQL scripts, you know, just to kind of deploy, you know, off to a SQL server. And so what I want to show you today is, you know, how we can overcome, you know, some of the problems in that script and some of the problems that kind of everybody has, you know, when they haven't really got their deployments kind of sorted out for multiple environments. And so, you know, how long, you know, does a deployment take? You know, I heard in Adam's session this morning, people were saying the Dynamics AX stuff, it takes like 5 hours to build and then another 3 hours to deploy, you know. So, you know, if that's all automated, maybe that's not such a big deal. But if your, you know, build takes a whole day and your deployment, you know, you might start and it might take you an hour, but then something goes wrong and it takes you, you know, 7 hours to roll back, you know, that's a pretty bad thing. Because then you've got, you know, maybe potentially have 10 different people from 10 different teams involved in that deployment. So deployments become this big thing that nobody kind of really wants to go into because, you know, such high risk and high visibility, and, you know, the last one failed, the one before that failed, so why would we go and, you know, do another one and take everything offline? the other thing that people kind of tend to want when they have a, you know, a mature deployment pipeline is they want to have manual approvals. So for example, you might have, you might allow your developers to deploy into a development environment or a test environment, and that's okay because that doesn't hurt anybody. But then you'll want your testers to sort of go, well, we don't just want anything from dev, we want something that dev has actually sort of said that, yes, you know, this is ready to go to the QA department or ready to go to the testers. And then the testers, they might sign off on something and say, yep, you know, we believe we've run the functional tests and we believe that this, you know, build is good. But before that gets promoted to production, you might have a production manager that sort of says, well, you know, I don't, you know, now's not the right time for us to, you know, upgrade production. We want to do it, you know, next Friday or something like that. And so what you want to include there is like an approval step where, you know, somebody or multiple people can go in and say, yes, you know, I approve this, you know, to move to the next stage. Another common problem is people, you know, how many people find problems in production that never found in test? You know, everybody finds those sort of problems, and, you know, and why is that? You know, often it's because the environments are completely, you know, either completely different or just enough different, or the deployment script that somebody ran, you know, they missed, you know, step number 12 of 40, and that makes it, you know, not work in production. And so these are kind of some of the problems that release management with Visual Studio can help you with. This slide is something that, you know, if you've been to any sort of ALM presentation or TFS presentation in the last, you know, there's an evolution of this slide, but this is kind of the last 3 or 4 years. And what Microsoft has done is they've spent a lot of time, or, you know, the Visual Studio team, they've spent a lot of time on the left-hand side of this diagram, which is, you know, helping teams, you know, teams be agile and, you know, iterate on that loop faster and, you know, manage their work through backlogs and basically, you know, get working and, you know, get stuff out. But the thing that's happened is because we've optimized, you know, this side of the diagram, we're now getting these development teams that are pushing, you know, code out, and it's all, you know, they've got multiple deployments, they're ready to, you know, deploy something every week or every day or something like that. But then, you know, it gets to the IT guys, and the IT guys go, well, hang on, you know, we can't do a deployment, you know, every 2 weeks or every week or every day. And so then, you know, to actually, you know, delight customers and, you know, unlock business value, you need to get that stuff that the developers are building, you need to get that deployed into production so people can actually use it. And so what we've got is we've got this bottleneck, you know, in the you know, before we get to the release pipeline. And, you know, the reason we have this bottleneck is it's complicated. You know, how many steps do you have to do to deploy a database and the website and all the dependencies and dependencies between services and things like that. And the other part of it is it's error prone. You know, oops, you know, I forgot to change the connection string to, you know, production, and, you know, you now got a production website pointing to pre-production or test, or, you know, there's lots of examples of kind of how that happened. It's chaotic. You know, how many people, you know, does it take to do a deployment? So we'll do a show of hands. How many people can do a deployment to production with one person? Okay, so that's about, you know, 10-15% of the room. How many people need, you know, five or more people or teams to do a deployment to production? It's about the same again. And that's been my experience, is that in traditional sort of IT shops, you know, the developers have got to talk to the testers, have got to talk to the DBA team, we've got to talk to the server team, we've got to talk to the network guys and the security, and you've got to get, you know, all together in a big room and have this kind of ship room. And it's just, you know, it's just chaotic. So what we can do here is we can automate this kind of bottleneck, and you know, by automating it, it means it's repeatable, it means it's testable, and it reduces the amount of time and effort it takes, you know, to get those bits from your development pipeline into your release pipeline. And so by doing, you know, automated deployments, now this is probably a good point to stop in saying that Release Manager, so the Visual Studio release management tool, you don't actually need TFS to use it. The way that I'm going to show you is you produce a build out of TFS, and then that goes into Release Manager, and you promote that through the environments. But you could be using TeamCD, or you could be using, you know, anything that creates, you know, like a zip file or a folder or a directory that you call your build. You can hook into Release Manager, and it'll take care of taking that and deploying it to the environments. So one of the things it does, like I said, automates the approval workflow. and you're deploying the same way to all the stages. So as part of this tool, you get to define what is your deployment workflow. And it's defined in a Windows workflow designer, and it's using scripts and executables and everything kind of underneath. And I'll show you how they're defined in the tool. And the beauty of all that is that by kind of automating this and checking all this stuff in and defining, you know, very clearly, you know, what is your release process in code, we can get traceability in, you know, for which is great for our QA department. So what QA want to know is, or tests want to know, is they want to know that, okay, this code was checked in, it became this build. This build went to, you know, the dev and the integration or the test environment. And then, you know, that same build, you know, nothing changed. It's still based upon the same source code. It went across, you know, to the QA environment, and that's what we're testing now. What the QA guys really hate is when, you know, one build has gone to one team and another build has gone to another team, and they're testing kind of the wrong thing. And so by using Release Manager with TFS, you're kind of setting up this traceability, you know, between all your environments back to your source code and your tests and all that sort of stuff. And so if we think about, you know, what we have to kind of build out here, you know, to build a release pipeline, we're going to think about the kind of lowest level, which is the infrastructure. So before you can deploy something, you've got to have an environment to deploy to. You've got to configure that environment. So what things need to be installed, you know, what Windows components or what Windows settings or what application settings kind of need to be, you know, on that environment before you can sort of start deploying your stuff to it. And then you come along, you bring the application, you know, that could be an MSI, it could be just plain copy files, it could be a SQL, you know, deployment script. Basically, if you can automate it using the command line, then you can do it through Release Manager. And I'll talk about, you know, the sort of different options there. Then, you know, one of the sort of bits of feedback we got from Adam's presentation and my presentation yesterday was, well, what about testing? And it's a really good question, you know. So, you know, sure, you can go and set up continuous deployment, and if you do it through TFS and hosted build, it'll go off and run your tests, and then it'll just go and deploy it anyway, even if the tests fail. And so, you know, you can go and configure that, but, you know, what you probably want to do is gate the deployment to an environment based upon the results of either the automated or the manual testing. And then lastly, you know, once something is deployed to an environment, what you probably want to do is notify people that, hey, you know, hey, testers, this has been deployed to the test environment. You know, can you go off, do testing? And then when you're ready, you know, hit the approve button, and then, you know, we'll move to the next stage. So does that seem like a pretty, you know, compelling sort of solution? Yeah, I see a few nods. Now, hands up, is anybody actually using Visual Studio Release Management, you know, at the moment? No, I can't see a single hand, so this is good. All right, so how does it all work? What we start with on the left-hand side is TFS. Now, like I said before, it doesn't have to be TFS, but you know, the way it works with TFS is TFS build, you know, does a continuous integration build or a nightly build or a scheduled build, you know, whatever sort of build that you want, it'll take your code, it'll compile it, it'll run those tests, and it'll drop it in a drop location, which is essentially a file share. Then what happens is this RM server, the release management server, which is another component that you can, you know, download MSDN or from, you know, from Microsoft and install, it kind of, you go into there using either well, you can't use the web client, but you go in using the desktop client and create a release. And using that release, you point it at a drop location and you say, I want to take this drop location and I want to push it through these stages of my release pipeline. And within that pipeline, you say, okay, I need to run these steps, you know, to deploy kind of this thing. And so, I mean, there's fancy animation here, but the other thing to consider here is, you know, your deployment is not just, you know, in the easy case, it's just take a folder and copy it up to a, you know, a single server. But in the more sort of common or more complicated cases, you might have to, you know, deploy things to three different web servers or three different web server farms, and then you've got to go and hit two different databases and things like that. And so with Release Manager, you kind of define all those different components and how those components get deployed to those different servers or groups of servers. Alrighty, so we're going to jump into a demo now. I apologize, this takes a little bit. I don't know why. What we're going to do for questions is, if you've got a question, I'll come down with a microphone like we did in Adam's session. That seemed to work pretty well. Has anybody got any questions before I sort of start? No? Let me run down there.
Just a quick one. Like, if you need to lock some files before you do the release, like, you know, you don't want to, let's say, web config files in the farm, you don't want to change that for a particular environment and you want to lock it within a farm for other applications.
Yep.
Can you customize that as well?
Okay, it's a good, I've actually got a bit in the demo, which talks about dealing with web config and transforming and that sort of stuff, so cool. All right. Alrighty, so the first thing I'm going to show you is everything I'm going to show you today, well, everything to do with release management is actually available in a VM or a VHD that you can actually download yourself and install on your own machine, provided you know, you've got enough memory and all that sort of stuff. So all you got to do is go up to this URL, VS13ALM VM. Good mate Brian Keller puts up this blog post, and every time Visual Studio comes out with an update, he refreshes this VM environment and publishes the VHD to download. But anyway, if you scroll down the bottom here, there's a nice big long list of self-extracting RAR files. I forget how big the VHD is, but you probably want to do it at work rather than home or something like that. And you probably want to keep a copy of the things that you download just in case you forget to snapshot or something like that. Alrighty, and so come along here, I've got my VM already up and running, and I've already started Visual Studio. And so what I'm going to do is, inside this VM, there's also a whole bunch of code and tutorials and sort of things set up. So it's a kind of self-contained sort of lab environment. And so what the demo that they have in here is this application that they call Fabricam Fiber. So think of it as, you could probably rename it to like NBN Co. or something like that. They've got a series of technicians that come along and, they're installing fiber connections, for customers. And so they've got, it's basically a ticketing system. But anyway, we got a local host 8000. This is our dev environment and, it's all there up and running. What I've got is I've got the code checked into TFS version control, not using Git. And We've got a web project, we've got an extranet project, which is kind of like a different version of the same website. We've got some UI tests, and we've just got some plain unit tests against our MVC controllers and things like that. So if I come along here, my local dev experience is just hit F5, it'll spin up the local dev server, make sure the site works, kind of everything's there. Spins it up. And I just want to make sure things work before I start deploying something that doesn't work. We'd get that in the dev environment, but why is that taking so long? There we go. Okay. So the other thing that I found with this is there seems to be a bug in the VM itself. And what the bug is it tries to do deployments to a SQL Express database, but it's kind of like reusing the same database or something crazy like that. And so what happens is it tries to do this database deployment, but the database is in use, so it can't kind of, it's got a lock on the file. So if we hit F5, run that again, and that's looking much better. There we go. So we've got our homepage. We can click through, do all sorts of things there. But the other thing that we've got set up is if we've got a Team Explorer, and we go to builds, we've got this build definition set up called Nightly Fabricam Fiber Dev. Now, what I actually want to do is I want to change this to a continuous integration build. And so what that means is that every time somebody does a check-in to this project, it's going to go and kick off a build, for this particular project. The other thing, if we go to the process tab, you'll notice here that the build process template is the release default template. And what happens is when you install the release management tools for Visual Studio, it actually drops this new release management template into your server, and it's an option for you to be able to choose, to hook up your build server to. But if we look at the properties, for this template, we see here that there's this extra section called release. And what it's going to do is, yes, it's going to release the build, which means, do you want this build to be released using release management server? And then you can also, if you wanted to, you could target a particular stage of your release management pipeline. So that's kind of the setup of your solution. What we're going to do is jump into the release management tool itself, and I'll give you a kind of a walkthrough of what's available. First thing you'll notice is it's kind of black and sort of dark gray. There's no way to change that. Some people like that, some people don't. But little bit of history. This was actually an acquisition Microsoft made of a third party product, of a product developed by a third party. And so those, it was a little company up in Quebec in Canada, and Microsoft acquired, you know, the couple of the developers that built it and the product itself. And over the last sort of 12, 18 months, they've kind of Microsoftized it by putting, you know, by making it, you know, work with the terms and all that sort of stuff. But it's actually, you know, if you ever got the first version or the pre-Microsoft version, it was a bit of a pain to install. But now we're kind of ironed out, you know, a few of those sort of issues. The way people tend to sort of demonstrate this is kind of right to left. It doesn't really, you know, sort of make sense, but what I want to do is kind of show you all the bits and pieces that are sort of in here, and then show you the release pipeline that kind of is composed of all those pieces. So if we look under administration, we can see here there's, you know, you can manage your users, you can do groups and security. So this is where you'd set up things like who's in your QA group and who are the people that can approve, you know, going from test to QA, or from QA to, you know, people that can prove, you know, different things. There's a concept here called pick lists, and this is where you can define sort of, you know, your list of environments. And if you want to, you can hook it up to TFS, and that's where you define your TFS connection. And that's also including, with the latest update 3, it's now got support for Azure environments. And so you can import your Azure subscription credentials and start doing some stuff in there. The next kind of interesting tab here is the inventory. And if we go to inventory and then tools, what you can see here is the tools, you know, that's kind of the terminology they use, the tools that that come with release management out of the box. So, you know, right here we've got IIS Deployer, we've got Anyfile Manager, if you're still using Anyfiles, Reporting Services, MTM, you know, Automated Test Manager. So if you're using Visual Studio Test Manager for doing, you know, either, or for doing automated tests, you can actually include, you know, this tool in your kind of pipeline and have it run the automated tests. If you're still, you know, if you're at, you know, Adam's sort of stage 2, you know, level maturity, you've got some Xcopy scripts, you can actually just replace those with this Xcopy tool and it'll take care of doing the same thing. And so we've got that set of tools developed by Microsoft. You can also develop your own. There's also some community ones. And what we need to do is then sort of wrap those tools in what we call actions. And the actions are the things that we're going to use to build out our sort of deployment script. And so, for example, here we've got remove website. So, you know, if you're deploying to a test environment, what you probably want to do is clean up the, you know, the thing that was already there, you know, if there's anything there, and then, you know, deploy, you know, create a new website and then copy your files and start your website. So you can see here we've got remove, restart, start, stop, you know, all that sort of stuff. If we move to the next tab, we've got this concept called release paths. And a release path is essentially the different state. This is where you define the different stages, you know, that you want your deployment to kind of go through. And so, you know, in this example here, I've got a dev stage, a QA stage, and a prod stage. And this is kind of where, this is not where the magic is, but this is kind of the thing that's missing from, you know, just doing plain continuous, you know, direct deployment. And what you can see here is that these stages refer to environments. And so environments are essentially, you know, groups of either individual servers or groups of servers. So for example, if I go into the dev environment has got a single machine in it, which happens to be, you know, my machine or the virtual machine that I'm running. And those machines can optionally have tags. And why would you kind of use a tag? Now, the reason that you would use a tag is, say for example, you need to deploy to a farm of web servers. So what you could do there is put in, you know, your 5 web servers, give them all the same, you know, tag of, you know, web tier or something like that. And then when you come back to your release path, you refer to that, you know, to the environment or with the servers, you know, of, you know, that have the tag kind of, you know, web tier. Now, these things here are hard-coded, the, you know, the different steps, but what you do have the option of saying is that it's automated. And what automated means is basically just, you know, sort of show an audit, you know, sort of trail that, yes, you know, that step happened, but it was automated, as in, you know, it either ran the automated, you know, steps or we just kind of skipped over it. And then the last thing here is an approval step. And in this case, I'm logged into the VM as Brian Keller, who happens to be the guy who built the VMs, but he's the single approver to go, you know, for the completion of the dev kind of deployment. And then the QA team, which is a group, they are the approvers for the QA stage. And then if you look up the top here, there's this thing called an acceptance step. An acceptance step is kind of like the first thing that's got to happen before that stage can kind of start. And so the example I gave before is, well, you know, perhaps You know, to go to production, you don't necessarily want, you know, your dev team or your QA team doing it. You might want your production manager to say, yes, you know, I accept this and I'm ready to start going to production. And so that's how you define, you know, who accepts this into production. And at the end, you typically have an approval step, which would say, yes, we've tested it, or we've smoke tested it in production, and everything kind of looks good. And that's kind of the validation step, or you know, some people make it the approval step. Does that kind of make sense to everybody so far? Yep. All righty. So the next, you know, now that we've got a, you know, we've got some tools configured, we've got a release path configured, what we need to do is go and configure an application. Now, an application in our case is called, you know, Fabricam Call Center, but it's actually made up of a series of components. It's actually, you know, one component, but if we go in here and look at, so the other thing that we're going to do is one of the questions that we got from our previous sessions was, how do I deal with, you know, web.config, and it was a question up the back, how do I deal with web.config and it being different between the environments? And so what I'm going to do here is I'm going to take web.config out of my website. I'm going to introduce here another key, so add key SMTP server value equals, you know, localhost. And that makes a lot of sense for when I'm running, you know, on my local machine. Localhost is probably, you know, the value that I want. Now, you know, it could be SMTP server, could be anything. I could actually do the connection string up the top here. Basically, what I want to do here instead is I want to do underscore underscore SMTP server underscore underscore. And what this is just a special token that when we go into Release Manager and set up the deployment script, it can do the token replacement as it goes between the different stages. So I'll copy that, save that, deploy that off. And before I go and actually check that in and trigger a build and a deploy, I want to go and sort of set up that configuration in my component. So I come along here, I go to configure apps, and I go to release templates, Fabricam Call Center. And this is where I get to define the workflow. So what we see here is there's a couple of different sort of options, or a couple of different kind of constructs that you have to sort of set up. But what we've got here is we've got this big container called a deployment sequence. And then inside of that, we're going to take a machine and we're going to run the remove website tool. And then we're going to, or what do we call it over here? It wasn't a tool, it was an action, the remove website action. And then we're going to run the copy file or folder, and we're going to copy it so we're going to take a backup of what's currently in the dev environment and back it up in a backup directory, and that's so that we can do a rollback later on. We're going to go and run this Fabricam Call Center component. But what we want to do here is we actually want to define, you know, what's the SMTP server for the dev environment that we're currently, you know, currently deploying. So if I come back here and go to components, bring up Fabricam Call Center, go to the tab called Configuration Variables, and I want to say after install, go and take all my star.config files and do a variable, a token replacement on SMTP server. And this is the SMTP server, you know, to be used. And I hit save, close. Now I can go back to my release template, come back in there, go to dev. And if I expand out this Fabricam Call Center, you can see now that I've got this extra parameter that I get to specify called SMTP server for my dev environment. So what I'm going to call here is I'm going to say this is my dev SMTP, you know, .com. Now, when I go and deploy when I go and use the create website kind of action, I can specify, you know, the app pool name, the site name, kind of all those things. And these are things that the create website action and the create website tool kind of have wired up and understand. But the next most interesting thing here is there's a rollback kind of sequence. And so this is, if something goes wrong in this deployment sequence, it's going to go and execute this rollback sequence. Also, if I go through a release manager and say, hey, I actually, you know, want to roll back to a previous version, it'll go back and use these rollback sequences to, you know, basically make it back to what it was. And so you can see here, it goes and takes the copy out of the backup directory and copies it, you know, to the real directory. Alrighty, now if we go and look at QA, we have to go and set up our environment variable over there. So we go and say QA SMTP.com, and then we go off to prod, and we've got to do the same there. So we say prod SMTP.com, and I'm going to hit save, hit close. And so now what I've got is I've got a release template, which is basically, that's essentially my deployment script. That tells, you know, release management how to deploy my application through the different environments. So what we want to go and do now is we're going to trigger a continuous integration. So that's, you know, check in a file and it's going to trigger a build. And so I go here, I go check in, and I say added web.config token, and hit check in. Come back here, go to home, go to builds. You can see here that the build was triggered for change set 69. We can hit refresh a few times. This is going to take a little bit because it's spinning up the build, you know, the build agent and the website and kind of everything is on my machine. But what we're actually going to see here, because that build definition was set up to talk to release management, the last thing it's going to do is going to kind of use the release management API to talk to release management and say, hey, you know, this build has just happened and it's ready to be, you know, it's ready to start the release management pipeline. And so we come in here and look at dev. What we're going to see the status on the right hand side here is in progress. Now ignore the date and the time, that's just a little sort of thing, like the VM is set, you know, every time you start the VM it sets the date back to July 9th 2003, and that's so all the burn down charts and everything kind of looks good. But you know, 5.18 at 5.17, you know, this release was created, and at the moment the current step that it's up to is that it's up to the approval step. So if we go and look at that, we can go to step details, we can see that the deployment, or this release was automatically accepted because that's what we had defined it to. It was deployed, it was validated because all those steps were kind of, you know, automatically happened. But the last step, that's a manual step, so Brian actually has to log in here and go, yes, you know, I approve this release. So the other thing we can do is we can go to the release management web portal. And I'll be honest, it's not very sort of full-featured, but the scenario that it's kind of used for is for sharing with stakeholders and saying, right, hey, here's the deployments we're getting in progress and here's the current stage they're up to. So what we can see here is about a minute ago, Fabricam call center, you know, this build, it's now up to Brian Keller. It's got one component, which is called Fabricam call center. The build is 2013.0709.7. So if we go back to our build log back in TFS, that's 2013.0709.7. And just quickly, if we look at the log of this, we can see that, you know, one of the steps in the log is if, you know, the configuration matches, go off and talk to, you know, release management, create a release and, you know, and start the deployment. So we come back here, and so I've got my, you know, my approval hat on. I can click, you know, this button over here. I can see the timeline of how it went through that kind of that first stage of that kind of dev deployment, and now it's waiting for approval. I can come along here. I can click this release and say approve. I say works on my dev environment, and I'll say approve. And so now what's going to happen is because that build has been approved, it's going to move to the next stage in that pipeline. And so if we go back to this one, we can see here in QA, we've now got a release that's in the QA kind of stage of our pipeline, and it's in progress. Now the step it's up to is actually approve release. So very quickly, it's gone off and copied those files, created that website. Now just to prove, kind of what happened there, I'm going to go to the disk, you know, where these websites are actually deployed, and I'm going to go to this is the dev folder. And I should be able to open up this web.config, and it should have my, you know, dev.smtp.com as my SMTP server. So go web.config, I'm going to go notepad, there it is there, add key SMTP server, you know, dev.smtp. And so it's done, release management has done that configuration sort of transform for me. Now, if I was to go and look at the log file for this, you know, this QA deployment, it shows me the kind of high-level steps there, but maybe as a QA manager, I want to know, you know, all the things that happened in, you know, to actually deploy it to QA. I might want to go and see, you know, every individual file that was copied and, you know, the actual transform and how that happened. What I can do is I can double-click this and go into the details of this deployment, and I can say view log. If I go and look at view log, it shows, well, actually, I want view sequence, releases. There, no, I want to go back to traffic overview. This is where I get a bit lost. So you go to QA, we want to go into the deployment, I want to view the components, and there's another log file here somewhere that shows us the individual steps. So QA, view sequence, view log. Ah, here it is, details. So on the deploy step, I can hit this little details button and I get to view the deployment log. And this is where we see those actions. So remove the website, copy the folders, you know, set up the website. I can hit view log on the actions and I can see here, you know, we ran the Fabricam website was deleted successfully and the action was performed. So a more interesting one is probably copy files. So what you can see here is this is the output of the xcopy task. It's saying, hey, we're going to copy from, we're going to take a backup of the current site and deploy it, you know, and put it into this backup folder, because that was our first step. And then we're going to go off and we're going to copy, we're going to actually do the deployment in view log. And this is where we actually go and take it out of the, not the drop folder itself, but you know, our copy of the drop folder and deploy it, you know, up to the site itself. And so straight away, now our QA guys and our, you know, if you've got auditors, our auditors can come along and go, right, yes, I see that this person approved this. I see that there's evidence that, you know, that these files were copied and I know where these files kind of came from. Alrighty, so what we're going to do is we're going to introduce another change to our site. So I'm going to go to views, I'm going to go to shared, I'm going to go to layout. I'm just going to update the header and I'm going to say support and I'm going to say release rocks. Now the other thing that I could do as a, you know, as a QA department, I could come along to releases and instead of approving that release, I could reject that release. So we say to approve, I'm going to select that, I'm going to say reject. Doesn't have the change, you know, doesn't have any changes. You know, we hit reject. And so that gets recorded in Release Manager. People can find out what happened to their build, why it got rejected, you know, sort of things like that. What I'm going to do is come back to Visual Studio. I'm going to check in this change. Check in. Added header. Check in. That's going to kick off a build, and I'll show you what that looks like once it deploys. So we go back to Traffic Overview. These little boxes here. Now, you see that went, that little traffic one went from 2 to 3. Well, that's an indication of how many deployments you've done in the last 5 days. And so if you're kind of measuring yourselves based upon how many deployments you can do, you know, this little dashboard that'll show you, you know, all your applications and how many you, you know, are in progress and how many are done. So now we've got a dev, this should say it's in progress, you know, that one was rejected, this one's in progress, it's ready to be approved. So we can actually go and hit our dev site. Now this is where I might have to restart. So what you can see here is I've updated the title, you know, on my dev site. You know, this is not my local machine, this is the dev server, and it's got, you know, that updated title. So that looks good to me. I'm going to go off and I'm going to approve that. Looks good to me. That's going to go off and it's going to get deployed to the QA site. So before I do that, I'm just going to stop the dev site just so it doesn't hurt me again. Manage website, restart. And then we go back to releases, previously approved. So at the moment, it's sitting with the QA team, it's deployed, and we can go off and we can say, look at our QA site. And yes, our QA site now has that change as well. It's taken that same build and deployed it off to QA. And if we go and look at the config file in our QA or our UAT environment, web.config, we can see here that it's replaced that same key with, you know, the QA value, you know, for that environment. And so as a QA person, I can come along to Release Manager, I can look at that, I can say, yep, you know, it's time to approve this release. Looks good in QA. And so if you remember how our deployment pipeline was sort of set up, the next thing we did is we wanted to kind of gate it before it goes to production. And so I'm going to log in to Release Management as sort of the production manager, and you know, it's waiting to go into production and it's waiting for me, you know, to kind of do that. And so one of the things that I can do when I approve it is I can say, yes, this is, you know, good to go, but I actually don't want to do it today. I don't want to do it right now because we've already, you know, we've got a major, you know, customer event on or something. So we don't want to go and push things to production right now. What we can actually do is set up a deferred deployment. So we might say Friday at 6 p.m. Or might say, let's say 6:25, because that's, you know, better than 6, you know, 24. And we'll go close and we'll hit approve. And so what's going to happen there is that Friday at 6:24 or whatever, that release manager is going to kick off that deployment and deploy off to the production site. And then it's going to, you know, if you've got it configured, it's going to send emails or, you know, move to the next stage and tell everybody that, hey, you know, we just completed a, you know, production deployment. So does anybody think that's pretty cool? Yeah, I see some nodding, so I'll take that as a yes. Anything else to show here? So what I'm going to do is jump into the next phase. Which is PowerShell desired state configuration, DSC. So first question is, you know, what is DSC? You know, the term kind of popped up about 14 months ago at TechEd US and then TechEd Europe, and a guy called Jeffrey Snover, who's a guy from Microsoft and basically the father of PowerShell, he's been, you know, squirreled away working on this. And essentially, think of the way that we normally do, you know, deployments. We'll start with an assumption about the environment. We'll assume that it was built from our, you know, our master image, so therefore, you know, it's kind of clean. And then that means that we can go and take our, you know, our xcopy script or our deployment script with all those, you know, for each and all that sort of, all those for, you know, if statements, and deploy that on that clean machine. And then what we hope for is that we get this machine to this state at the end, which is, you know, our application kind of deployed. But as everybody knows, you know, if there's anything wrong with those assumptions, you know, at the start or that script kind of in between, you don't end up with that thing that you desire, you know, at the end. And so what desired state configuration is instead of, you know, kind of defining all the individual sort of steps, it sort of says, at the end of the day, I want to end up with a server, you know, with an application deployed that looks like this. And so it's basically treating your configuration as code. And so Adam, in Adam's session, they talked about Netflix and Etsy and Flickr and all those guys. This is, you know, and Facebook as well. That's what these guys are doing. The way Facebook actually does deployments is they spin up all these servers from a master image, or it's basically just a, yeah, it's almost a master image. But the first thing those servers do is they call into a configuration server and say, hey, what configuration do you want me to apply, you know, to make myself, you know, part of the farm? And so that way that configuration is defined centrally, but the server itself knows how to kind of get to that end state. And so, you know, DSC does that. Now, the way that desired state configuration works is there's these things called resource providers, and I'll show you, you know, what some of those are. But each of those resource providers knows how to work with a certain sort of component. So think about our example where we had the IIS tool. The IIS tool knew how to, you know, remove a website, start a website, you know, stop a website, you know, whatever. With DSC, you can do the same thing, but using the desired state configuration, you know, resource provider for website, for IIS websites. And it implements three functions. It's got a get function, so get the current state of my of this IIS website. Test function says, okay, test to see if the current state of this website matches, you know, this kind of one that I want to have. And then the set function says, okay, go and change this IIS website to be the configuration, you know, that I'm telling you. And so the way that people describe it is, you know, DSC and the resource providers, they kind of make it so. You just kind of tell them, you know, what you want, and they make it so. You know, if that website was already deployed, it'd go, or already deployed with the wrong name or something like that, but you said, I want to deploy, you know, I want to, my desired configuration is this other name, you know, it'll go off and do it. DSC resources. Now, there's a cool thing here called the shared gallery. And what it means is, so, you know, everybody goes off and writes their own, you know, PowerShell scripts or command lines to deploy, you know, their databases and their websites. And so there's hundreds of thousands of different ways to deploy, you know, an IIS website or, you know, a database or something like that. And so out of the box, we've got out of the box, or actually included with Windows, is you know, a handful of resource providers. So what you can see there is there's a environment resource, a file resource, groups, you know, Windows process, things like that. If we go Windows feature, this is actually the one that people use the most. And this is the example here is, you know, the Windows feature. So imagine if you were in a VM and you want to open up Server Manager and you want to install IIS on this box. You know, you could come in here and say add roles and features, IIS, check the right things that you wanted. Or you can actually create a PowerShell DSC configuration that says, I want to ensure, so ensure present, so that's saying that I want to, you know, make sure that this this thing is present and that the web server feature is present on this machine. And so the way that this actually works, before I kind of switch to that, so there's a bunch of ones that Microsoft provides, and then there's also the script resource kit. And so this is up on the TechNet gallery. And so the PowerShell team and a bunch of MVPs and stuff have sort of got together and built resource providers for all sorts of things. So there's a resource provider for Hyper-V. And yesterday in my presentation, I talked about Chocolate. And just as a side note, I did get it working and Git is now installed. it turns out I had two packages and I was uninstalling the wrong one. But anyway, using DSC, you can actually do a similar thing, and you can ensure that a database, Chrome is installed on your machine because you might require it for your testing. Or for example, you might want to deploy an Active Directory domain controller instead of going off and writing this big PowerShell script that says install feature and configure, whatever. You can actually use this resource provider to define it once, and it will just kind of make it so. And so they're the kind of community ones. The other thing that I'll show you is there's this other kind of preview thing called the PowerShell Resource Gallery. So we've seen NuGet for installing packages, into your applications and open source and things like that. We've seen Chocolate, which is installing packages and things onto your desktop. This is kind of the same thing, leveraging a package repository, but for PowerShell scripts. And what we're finding is a lot of the DSC resource providers are actually getting published up to the PowerShell provider as well. But there's also cookbook modules, all that sort of stuff. And the beauty of these is, if you want to do web administration, you just go install. You're in your PowerShell prompt. You say install module exit web admin, and you can now manage web servers just by after running that command. Now at the moment it's in preview because it does require this Windows Management Framework 5.0 preview. But once you've got that, it ships with the next version, that'll just be on every machine that's got PowerShell on it. Alrighty, so back to here. All right, so on the left, you've actually got three different commands here. On the left-hand side, you've got the DSC configuration. And this is, this particular configuration is saying, my Fabricam Fiber website is the name of the configuration. It's going to take a server name as its parameter. And to deploy this website, I need to have the IIS feature present. I need to have the ASP.NET feature present. And then if you actually scroll down there, it's got a copy files configuration that says, I want these files to be present on this website. And then once you've got that configuration, you go back to PowerShell and you run this, you basically run this configuration script. And PowerShell and Windows now understands what this configuration kind of node means. And what it actually goes and does is generates a MOF file, M-O-F, which is, MOF is actually a industry sort of standard managed operations format. So if you're using Puppet or Chef or something like that, it can actually generate and consume MOF as well. Now, you can actually just hand write these MOF files yourself. But the beauty of doing it in PowerShell is you get the syntax and all that sort of stuff. Once you've generated this MOF, this MOF file for a specific web server, you then go and run start DSC configuration and pass it where that MOF file is. And what it will go and do is it'll use Windows RM, so Windows Remote Management, which is installed with Windows Server 2012. And if you install it, it's a feature of Windows. And it will go and tell that server to do what it needs to do to become that sort of configuration. Now, the other thing you can run is this commandlet called test DSC configuration, or there's another property you can set. But what test DSC configuration does is you can actually point it at an existing site and an existing configuration and say, does this server match this configuration? And so that's great for your testers, your IT admins to say, hang on, have we got configuration drift? Has somebody gone and modified production without checking that change back into source control or without pre-testing it in pre-prod or something like that? The other thing that you can set up here is you can actually set up you can set it up in three modes. One mode is just take a configuration, apply it to a server. Another mode is take a configuration, apply it to the server, and let me know if the server drifts from that configuration. And the third option is take a configuration, apply it to the server. if it ever drifts from that configuration, just apply the configuration again. So it's actually really funny. You sit there and you delete a folder, and then that folder magically appears again. And one of the things I ran into as I was setting up a demo and stuff, and I kept deleting, you know, folder, and I wanted to kind of get rid of a configuration, but the configuration was still applied, you know, to that server, so it kept kind of reapplying it. And the way you actually have to kind of take away that configuration is you have to change it from ensure present to ensure absent. And by saying ensure absent, you know, it applies that configuration and says, okay, take away those files. Alrighty. And so I guess what I'm setting up here is in Visual Studio Release Management Update 3, we introduced this new thing called agentless deployments. And so what you saw in the demo, what you saw before, is there was this thing called on our dev servers and our QA servers, we actually had to get the IT guys to install the release management agent. And so sometimes that can be a tricky kind of, you know, conversation. It's like, hey, you know, dev go, or hey, IT guys, can you just install this agent on all your servers? And some of them will go, no. And some of them will go, why? And then you go, well, you know, it's going to help you get out of doing deployments. And they go, oh, okay, you know, I'll install it. And some of them just go, no, you know, they'll just go, no, no, no. And that's where the beauty of DSC comes along, because desired state configuration is built into Windows. And so you don't actually need to install any agents on the machine. The installation is done kind of remotely using the remote management stuff. And so the way that it works is you'll do a deployment with Release Manager, and Release Manager has kind of like an agent installed on itself, and it uses that to talk to all the servers without having to talk to, you know, a Release Management agent. All right. I don't have enough time to go through a release, but if you're interested in this sort of stuff, go and look up channel9.msdn and look up DSC. Just do a search for DSC. You'll find plenty of stuff over there. And the presentation to look for is Jeffrey Snova. He doesn't talk about it with, you know, the release management tools, but he does talk about, you know, what DSC is kind of capable of. What I want to show you is the Azure Resource Manager. And this is where I said that, you know, it's kind of a little bit different. So Azure Resource Manager has got nothing to do with, you know, what I spoke about yesterday and Git and continuous deployments, and it's got nothing to do with Visual Studio Release Management. Now, it is possible to have release management use Azure Resource Groups, but what I want to kind of talk about is that Azure Resource Groups is a way of sort of saying, okay, instead of just deploying a website over here, a database over here, and a storage account over here, resource groups allow you to kind of group them together and treat them as one sort of thing that you want to deploy together. And so I'll switch quickly to a demo, and that'll probably help you out. All right, we're there. And so the way to get to this is you go to Azure Release Manager Tools. It's just it's a download, it's in preview. And we fire up Visual Studio. And we go new project, and once you've installed Azure Resource Manager tools, you get this new thing here called Cloud App from Azure Gallery. We go okay, and at the moment they've only got two templates. They've got a website template and a website plus database template. We're going to choose the website. We go okay, and it's going to create a basic, you know, MVC. Go no auth, and we'll go okay. The other thing that I'm going to show you just quickly is, has anybody heard of the PowerShell Tools for Visual Studio extension? We've got five people. Basically, if you're writing PowerShell and you want to check those, you know, scripts in, you can actually install this extension for Visual Studio, and you get the project system and integration with source control and things like that. And so if I go and open up this PowerShell script, I've now got IntelliSense, so I can say set, you know, strict mode dash, you know, dash version 3, you know, all that sort of stuff. And I can do IntelliSense, you know, IntelliSense, so the dropdowns, all that sort of stuff in Visual Studio. But what I've got when I do a resource, an Azure resource group, is I've got this new project called a deployment project. And in there, there's a JSON file. And that JSON file is a kind of like DSC, but it's kind of Azure's sort of own format, in that it defines that I've got this resource, which is, you know, a server farm. In there, it's got a site, it's got a hosting plan, you know, it's basically all the settings that I would have to go and manually set up or script out in the Azure website configuration. It's defined those in a configuration. Then what I can go and do is say deploy to resource group. I go and create a new resource group, so I'll say Cloud 3, and I'm going to say I'll pick the new Australian data center. Just kidding. create new resource group location. That should be populating. Website JSON. For some reason, it should be populating the list of things there, but it's not. And then basically you choose the different things there. You go and deploy that, it'll go. Then you go off to the portal, you've now got a resource group with everything that was in that configuration is up on the portal, and then you can go off and say, I want to publish my application to this resource group, and it will take care of putting your website in the right places in that resource group. The other thing you can do is you can also take this PowerShell script, you can hook this PowerShell script up to Release Manager, and Release Manager will go off, and provided it's got all the right things installed, it'll go and make that configuration, you know, using the Azure API, it'll make that configuration, you know, kind of happen. So, I know that was very brief. It's kind of, I spent a lot of time on the release management part because I think that's the important bit, but I also want to kind of get you guys interested in the other things that are possible. So, I mean, the way to think about it is you're defining this configuration in code, and this configuration is more than just like a single website. It can be the other, you know, it can be as many, you know, components as you want. Now, why would you bother doing this? And the reason you can do this is you can take that configuration, you can give it to, you know, 10 of your devs. Each of your devs can use their own Azure subscriptions and deploy a copy of that environment up there because they're able to, you know, that configuration is defined in code. All right. So in summary, we've seen how Visual Studio Release Management can reduce your cycle time because you've automated, you know, all those steps, and you've still got the right approvals in place. You've just automated them. PowerShell desired state configuration, it's the future, so it's probably a good time to sort of at least understand, you know, what you can do with it. And if you're about to go out and write a whole bunch of deployment scripts, have a think about, you know, how you could do them with DSC. And then, you know, Azure Resource Groups is kind of in preview at the moment, but it's, you know, it's kind of, you know, I can see a day where sort of these three things sort of come together. Related content, now, obviously, you know, it's the end of, you know, end of Tech Ed almost, there's another session left, but all these sessions will be available for streaming up on channel9.msdn, so you can go and, you know, watch the streams there, and if you want to come to Tech Ed Sydney, I'll be up there as well, so you can watch all this again. Now, just a quick sort of reminder, yesterday I got like 4 evals, so you know there was more than 4 people here. So just a reminder, if you get a chance, go and chuck in, you know, your details in the eval. I'd love to hear what you think about the sessions, and also, you know, what more that, you know, you kind of want to know about. So if you've got questions, I'll be around at the back afterwards, and thank you very much.